now welcome to This Time in History with the podcast guy, Matt King.
And welcome back finally to This Time in History. Guys, it's been a while. I've taken a big break and I've been busy with my other podcast, The Municipals, but I'm so happy to be back. We are joined today by a special guest. His name is Donnie. He's got an amazing story, and I'm going to let him tell you. Donnie, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience, and then we can go from there. If I have questions, I'll interrupt you, and we'll see where your story takes us.
Okay. My name is Donnie Hay. I'm a 60-year-old recovering drug addict with 15 years sobriety. My story starts when I was 10.
Wow, that young.
For some reason, my mother, I guess I was one of those hard to handle kids. And my mother thought it would be a good idea that her and the children's aid put me in a mental institution. Oh. The Lakeshore Psychiatric Hospital for Youth. And that's where it started. I went into the place, they shut this metal door, and I freaked. I saw my mother driving away. She just left me there. And they sedated me. And they put me in a room. And I was overlooking the lake. And at that moment, I knew I wanted to feel that way all the time. Because I wasn't angry. I wasn't hurt. I wasn't I was at peace. And from that moment on, it started. I didn't stop until I was 45. 35 years of drug addiction, not off and on, pretty well straight through.
Can I ask which ones?
Oh, which drugs?
Yeah.
Oh, you name it. Yeah, I wasn't prejudiced. I didn't again.
So, but would you agree with the, I guess it's a stigmatism that that marijuana is a gateway drug?
Actually, you know what? Unfortunately for me, they got me hooked on liquid Valium. That was the first drug that I tried. I didn't start smoking pot until much later.
Wow.
So basically for me, it was backwards.
Wow.
I just started on the hard drugs. And when I stayed there a year, and when I went home, they gave my mother a year's supply of 10 milligram Valium. And as soon as I opened my eyes, my mother had a pill and a drink.
Every time? You mean every time?
Every day. And then it got to a point where it's like, okay, I'm just going to start taking them. The only time she's going to worry is when the supply started getting low. And it just from there, it just skyrocketed into cocaine, heroin, meth, crystal meth. Not crystal meth, but methamphetamine back in the 70s and 80s. Alcohol wasn't a real big problem for me, except when I did cocaine.
Okay.
So most of my life is spent anesthetized, basically. I was married twice, both times.
Well, hold on. Let's back up for a second. So what about, school? Were you able to finish school or no?
I went to university.
Okay. So
that's an interesting story.
I'm just curious how you were able to manage, I guess maybe that's the wrong word, but, I assume at that point you were already addicted.
I was already hooked. Oh yeah. I'd had about 13 years. To be honest with you, and I'm not saying that this is a good way to go, but cocaine for me it sharpened my senses.
Right.
I did very well in school. I got a degree in commercial banking, and I worked at the data center at the Royal Bank for 5 years, and then I decided to embezzle money for cocaine.
Oh, I didn't see that one coming.
I'm sorry?
I said I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah. I embezzled $15,000, and from December 4th, 1989, I embezzled $15,000. It took me 3 weeks to go through it for cocaine. 3 weeks, the December I took it. So from December 4th till the 20th, I spent $15,000 and I got caught. And they gave me a choice, club fed, or so they sent me to a treatment center in the U.S.
Right.
Which worked. But then I went on to another drug. Like, I was never at the same treatment center for the same drug twice.
Right.
It was always a new one. And then detox centers, 25, 30 of them, easy. Some court appointed, some not. And it never worked out. And I moved to Guelph in 2006, and I was still using. My wife left me. My kids left me. I was alone. So I decided to go into Stonehenge, which is a therapeutic community
right.
here in Guelph. And funny story, I got thrown out for bringing drugs on the property.
Wow.
I was there almost 6 months. But that program, subconsciously, I must have learned something. Because from that moment on, when I left there, I finally took responsibility for what I've done and what I've. And from that moment on, it's been amazing for me. January 29th, 2023, my wife of 20 years passed from fentanyl. It caused congestive heart failure.
I'm so sorry.
She was 40 years old when she had a massive heart attack. And from that moment on, from 2014 to 2023, I slowly watched her die. And I was strong. I was strong in my recovery. And I didn't let it get the best of me. And when she died, and not just her, but there's been a lot of people in my life that have died before me because of drugs. It's a hard road. It's
absolutely it is.
But now, being in recovery, I'm still clean and sober. I'm stronger than ever. And my wife made a mistake, and it cost her her life. She ended up in a place called St. Joe's Health Center. It's a palliative care unit in Guelph.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw what drug addiction did to these people, and they stopped using by then. The damage was done. Wow. There's so many things I could say. This is my first podcast, by the way.
And you're doing an amazing job.
I'm an advocate. We'll get into my advocacy. I'm an advocate for drug addiction in the city of Guelph. For the last 5.5 years, I've been petitioning to bring a detox treatment center in Guelph. Because I've seen way too much collateral damage done by this. Mothers burying their 20-year-old children, and vice versa. Children burying their parents for something that could have been prevented. And it's hard advocacy. Don't get me wrong. It's mentally taxing. It's emotionally taxing. But somebody's got to do it. And I have the story. I have the strength to do it.
I know you wanted me to mention Safe Supply.
The Safe Supply. The first piece of legislation that the Canadian government has ever come up with. We have a Safe Supply program here in Guelph. And I know people personally, they get, believe it or not, between 25 and 30 Dilaudid 8s a day. That is enough to kill a bull elephant.
Holy.
Every day. Dilaudid is hydromorphone.
Okay.
So what they do is they take these pills, they go to drug dealers, sell them for $3, they get their fentanyl or their crystal meth or their drug of choice, and they don't have to pay for it because these pills are free. And then these pills end up in markets where Safe Supply doesn't exist. So basically they've turned crime. They say that the crime on the street has gone down because of it. Well, now you've just made them drug dealers.
Right.
Right. And being a drug addict, I understand the urgency. Because when you're in withdrawal, my friend, I wouldn't wish that upon my worst enemy.
I'm interested to know your opinion on safe injection sites.
Oof. I have no use for them either, because it's just enabling them. And most of them in Guelph don't use them. They don't use it. They're shooting up in the streets. Like today I saw it. I was downtown today and I saw it. Right. So the safe injection sites are basically useless. They give you free needles, they give you free cookers, and they give them to you and go, good luck.
Here in Toronto, they want to start rolling out what they're calling modular housing, but with an attached safe injection site within the modular housing unit.
They've done that in Guelph, actually. In one of the shelters, they took over a hotel, the Holiday Inn Express. And when they first did that, just as the pandemic hit, they had a safe injection site on site. That hotel is now a full-time shelter because the Holiday Inn Express sold it to the federal government.
Wow.
Because of the destruction, millions of dollars in damage. They've turned them into meth dens. They do drugs and I know this for a fact, they do drugs in the room and nobody stops them. I've had so many friends die in this place.
Wow.
One friend, his name is Justin. I won't say his last name. He died of a fentanyl overdose, but he overdosed in front of his door and he lied there for 8 hours before they found him. They don't check these places. Now they're talking about decriminalization for 3.5, right? Now, BC thought, hey, that's a great idea. Well, in BC, it's been a few months and their death rate from overdoses have gone up 300%. The person that was selling the fentanyl, the coke, the crack, the heroin, the meth, and all that, ironically, died of a drug overdose. Just recently, a couple of months ago.
Wow.
Nobody, and I try not to politicize this, because it's not what it is. It's a grassroots initiative. It becomes politicized when we need money to build it, right? And nobody wants to fix this problem. Everybody thinks it's fine just giving them free drugs. And the only people that benefit are big pharma.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's disgusting. And it's like people, they shut their door. And once they shut their door, it doesn't exist. And, you know, I've said to a few leaders, like a few council members and the mayor, and I said, let me ask you something. If your child was drug addicted, would you be sending him to the doctor for 30 Dilaudid 8s a day? And that's on top of the methadone they get, which is a synthetic heroin.
Right.
Which to me is an oxymoron, because one cancels the other.
Absolutely.
That's what methadone does. It blocks.
Yeah, it's supposed to make you sick if you take anything else.
Yeah, but it doesn't. And it's, I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought for a second.
That's okay. Well, I was just going to say, you know, we just came back from a funeral today. Is a friend of the family, and unfortunately she passed away at 37. She lived in a rooming house. They didn't find her for 6 or 7 days. I'm not sure if drugs were involved, but I can say that she's had drug issues on and off her whole life. And, you know, it's sad when that stuff happens.
It's devastating. It's not sad.
Yes.
You know, because when they die, there's no answers. The parents, I remember one funeral I went to, Justin again. They were wheeling his casket down and his mother was walking behind it and she had to be helped because she couldn't walk. Excuse me. And she let out this wail of anguish and despair like I've never heard. And it's not the only time. when my wife died, I heard that sound, but it came from me. And it's preventable. Hey, let me be clear on this. Treatment centers aren't for everybody. And it's not a silver bullet. I don't claim that it is. But when you only have one option, what are you going to take?
You're right.
You're going to take the safe supply. It's easy, and you don't have to spend money to get fentanyl. Because all they've done is cause this to be a currency. And every, I still get calls from mothers begging me to help them, but there's nothing I can do. There's nothing here.
And so I don't know, did you say that you've been in contact with, I'm drawing a blank, Mayor Cam Guthrie. Cam Guthrie, sorry. It's been a long day, so I drew a blank there. But you've been in contact with him. I guess what I'm asking is, did you forward a proposal to city council?
I'm sorry?
Did you forward a proposal to city council?
Oh, yes. Actually, yes. We sent, I belong to, I was co-founded an organization called As Now Alliance.
Okay.
Awareness Solutions Now. We've sent it to the hospital. We've sent it to City Hall. I've sent it to Mike Schreiner, who's the green guy here. Not a good he does, but anyways. I've sent it to all these people, and it's crickets. Do you know how much we could save the city of Guelph a year? $15 million a year with a treatment center. Because then that kind of, the healthcare is kind of eased up because the treatment center will take it.
Right.
It's a medical detox with a treatment. And nothing. Not even a thank you for inquiring. Nothing. Nobody wants to hear this.
You know, that is... We should, you know what? I've been trying to get Cam Guthrie on my other show, The Municipals, for quite a while. We haven't been able to nail down a time. I am going to see if I can get him on, and that is actually something I'm going to ask him directly.
Thank you.
That's not an issue. Yeah, no, I.
Hey, you want a cell number?
Let's not do that on the air. So tell me, so once you got yourself to a place where you were sober and you were able to demonstrate willpower, I guess is what I'm saying.
Not willpower. It's how I look at it is I have probably one of the greatest support systems in the world. I have a lot of friends, and you know, there's days, and I'll be honest, there was days where I wanted to hang myself or I wanted to use so bad, but I had a support system that allowed me not to do that. And not everybody is that fortunate.
Unfortunately, you're correct on that. Not everybody's that fortunate.
I'm grateful for every one of them. But like I said, I'm not, I have friends ask me, why are you still sober after all you've been through? Now, I'm not a Bible thumper, per se. I'm spiritual.
Right.
And I believe that God took something from me I can never replace. But he gave me something in return. He gave me a purpose afterwards.
Right.
And he doesn't barter. So I take that gift and I go with it. There's a lot of people that need help. And if I'm the person to do it, so be it.
So when did you, how far into your own recovery did you become a sponsor?
Pardon me?
I said, how far into your own recovery did you become a sponsor?
I'm not a sponsor.
Sorry. I thought you were a sponsor.
Yeah, I'm an advocate but everybody knows me, everybody. Most of the people that I deal with, I used to use with.
Wow.
So there's no, you don't know what you're talking about. They know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm hoping that they can see me do this. That maybe with the proper treatment here, they can do the same.
I'm not sure if you're aware of the issues going on in Toronto, but
I am.
So
I'm actually speaking towards our fiscal situation. So we're a city that's broke. I mean, that's not a secret.
Oh God, yeah.
I'm just wondering if one of the reasons that your proposal is not being considered would be because Guelph is also broke like Toronto, or
yeah, but you know what? I've been doing this for 5.5 years. I can't see them being broke for 5.5 years.
So this was pre-pandemic, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah, 2018 I started.
And they said no then.
And they knew. I made real sure they knew. I'm really vocal about it. But you know, so the municipalities can't really help with funding. So that falls on the provincial and the federal government. Like the Liberals. They're the ones that passed the bylaw, passed the law that safe supply is okay.
Yes.
It was a Liberal initiative.
Yeah, because, well, I mean, I rag on him enough on the other show, but Trudeau is soft on crime.
He's soft on a lot of things.
Yes, he is.
So I was going to say something.
what kind of response have you gotten from the provincial government?
Now, the provincial government, not much, but the federal government, different story.
Okay.
Now, like I said, I don't want to politicize this, but the one leader who actually, and it's surprising, took this initiative under his belt and is moving with it is Pierre Poilievre. He doesn't want safe supply. He doesn't want safe injection sites. He wants treatment beds. And he was willing to take the money from the safe supply for the different cities and put it towards treatment. In bed treatment. He wants rid of the safe supply. He goes, it doesn't work. Maybe it was a good idea at the time, or they thought it was, but it's just made it worse. Like I said, I'm not saying I'm a conservative. I'm not saying I'm a liberal. I'm saying I'm an NDPer. Well, I'm not a liberal, I'm an NDPer. But the conservative government, the federal conservative government, wants to do something about this. And my best bet is when he's in power, you know, make him my new best friend.
Well, I mean, I think as we do on the other show, I think we can maybe agree, I don't know, that he is the government in waiting because no one's going to, if you're not going to vote Liberal, you're definitely not going to vote NDP because they're in bed together.
They're in bed together.
Metaphorically speaking. And that leaves one party. And even though I'm of the belief that every single politician should be independent because, you know, the party controls the counts, well, the MPPs and the MPs.
Yep.
Who vote. So the party controls the votes. The donors control the parties.
That's right. We know that. And you know, it's just not the NDP and the Liberals. It's the Bloc that's jumping in on this with the Liberals.
Right.
And you know what? It's like, okay, what is it about this guy?
I've been trying to figure that out for years.
I even
thought about running where I live as an independent federally.
You should have.
Well, I mean, I still have the opportunity in 2025.
Yeah. Well, I have a feeling there's going to be an election before that.
One can only hope.
One can only hope. Yeah, that's exactly it.
So going forward, you're still going to be pursuing a treatment. So you're not talking. So I want to make sure I word this properly because a lot of my words are jumbled in my head right now. But so, like, we have CAMH here.
Yes. We have CAMH here as well.
Okay, so is what a treatment center that you're proposing, what's the difference between that and CAMH is, I guess.
Okay, so the treatment center I'm proposing is a 5 to 7 day medical detox. And in the same building, we'll start small, 15 beds, 30-day program. Right? Because in most treatment centers that are 4 to 6 months, you need a 30-day program behind your belt before they let you in. So what we're trying to do is make sure the links don't break, that there's no interruption. So you go from the detox straight into the 30-day program. We wanted some supportive housing so that when they're waiting to get into the treatment center for 4 to 6 months, they're not thrown back on the street, because right, then you're just wasting money, because the cycle's just going to continue. But like I said, we can't save them all, Matt. We can't. As much as I'd love to. But that doesn't mean we can't try.
Absolutely.
Right? They need to be the one saying, I need this. But without an option, you know what they're going to do. And people are going to continue to die. The mental illness, the homelessness that it causes is, we have an encampment in Guelph downtown. It's a tent encampment because they have nowhere to go. It seems that nobody cares about them, you know?
Wow.
It's sad. It breaks my heart. And I know some of these people really well. And it breaks my heart. I can't, and there's nothing we can do for them except watch them deteriorate.
You know, I, on my way home from work, I usually pass an encampment.
Yeah.
And I will say, like, personally, it makes me feel like shit because I want to do more and I can't. I either don't have the time, I don't have the money.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, hey, life is bad in this country. I've never seen it this bad. I never thought that I would hear people call our prime minister a pedophile and a crook. And you know what I mean? Like, he's embarrassed us so badly on the world stage.
You get no argument from me.
And nobody wants, and you know what? Nobody wants to deal with this guy. So how can we get things done if nobody wants to deal with this guy?
I absolutely agree with you.
Absolutely. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, so he wants to, Guelph was talking about decriminalizing it. And I'm a big advocate against safe supply. They know. And sometimes, you know, I'm the maker of my own misery. Right? But if I don't stand up and say, hey, you know, this is wrong and this is why. A friend of mine told me many years ago when I first started, because I was really timid, right? Because I didn't want to piss anybody off. I didn't want, you know what I mean? I didn't want to rock the boat. And you know what she said to me? She said, if you're going to stir the pot, be prepared to lick the spoon. And it served me well, because I've licked many spoons that taste like shit. You throw sugar on it, tastes fine, right? Goes away afterward, right? And absolutely. People know my views on the safe supply and other things. And sometimes that's a hindrance, because this is basically a liberal town, right? So the politicians are politicians, I guess, but nothing will get done because safe supply, they pound that. So Guelph, they gave Guelph $1.2 million to start and then gave them $4.1 million after that. For a city of 130,000 people, you're giving us $5.2 million for drugs?
Wow.
You know, and now the government has become the drug dealer. It's insane. Like, I understand them legalizing pot because it's a good tax grab. It works for the government, right? And people are going to smoke pot anyways. Doesn't matter. But when you start funding drugs that could kill somebody and you don't care, and Big Pharma goes, well, that person's gone. Well, next. Because there's always somebody else. How many mothers that call me and say, have you seen my daughter downtown, or have you seen my son? Sometimes I don't answer them because I can't tell them.
Wow.
I can't tell them what I've found. One girl I saw today, her name is Jade, and she's heart problems from the fentanyl. Like, she's as good as gone. And she asked me how her mother was doing. And I had to say to her, she's waiting for the call.
Oh.
And you know what she said to me? And she goes, she'll probably get a call from the morgue.
Wow.
Nothing you can do, man. You have to watch and let nature take its course, so to speak. It's insane here. It's absolutely insane. And, you know, it goes for people, you know, they go in their houses, shut their doors, doesn't exist. Right?
Yeah. I'm just aware of our time. So I'll start off by, you know, thanking you for, you know, coming on here and telling your story. I know it's sometimes it's hard to talk about it because you're reliving it. I've been there. You know, I lost my mother and brother in the same month, in the same year. So I understand. No, that it wasn't drug related, but you know,
but it doesn't matter. Loss is a loss.
Exactly. So I'm going to give you the floor now to talk about even to make your closing statement. And, you know, I actually had one more question before you did sure. That is, you know, from everything that I've learned. So and I assume these the stuff you've said is all the short version.
Yeah.
Would you ever consider maybe writing a book, or maybe you've done that already?
No, a couple of people have said that to me, especially about my wife in the last 9 years of her life. Right now, I think I would do that once we get a treatment center. You know, then it's like, okay, this is what my advocacy has done. You know what? They bring a treatment center here. I can die the next day and I'd be happy. You know?
Right.
What do I want to say to people? It's hard. All I can say is, with a lot of work and the proper treatment, recovery's possible. I'm living proof. It's possible. I know a lot of drug addicts and myself too. I always thought when I was using, like, if I could have one chance to sit there and go, I want to do the right thing no matter what is going on in my life. Well, I got that opportunity. I could have easily given up after my wife died. I could have killed myself and it would have been over and that would have been it. But you know what? It's what I hate to say, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it's true.
I have heard that one.
And I know I don't like the saying personally, but it's true. Addiction is such a hard problem to face. And you'll never solve it. Make no mistake. There's no cure for this. Okay? You don't recover and then, oh, God, I'm cured. No, because you still have that addictive personality. And you really have to keep yourself in check when it comes to that. Because it could be sex, food. You know what I mean? Anything that you do in excess is an addiction. But some addictions will kill you faster. And I want people to know when they're suffering, please reach out to somebody, anybody. It may not make you feel any better, but it may take a little load off your chest.
And again, I just want to thank you for coming on the show and telling your story and really putting yourself out there. We need more people like you in this world, more people that are willing to stand up and fight.
It's all I can do.
So I want to thank you, and you know, you're welcome back on the show anytime for any topic we can talk about. And like I said, when I get a hold of Cam Guthrie, hopefully we can have a conversation about Guelph.
Yeah, good luck with that. Okay, well, Matt, thank you so much.
Now welcome to This Time in History with the podcast guy, Matt King.